So welcome everyone to our Parshas Toldos class, 5775, the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. Was our patriarch Jacob a liar and a deceiver? Our first source tonight defines for us the character of Jacob, of Yaakov Avinu, our patriarch, Jacob. We say that Yaakov emes udevarcha emes, that the essence of Jacob was emet, truth. As the quote that I have in source one, which comes to us every single day, we say this in the Uvalitzion Goel. We say, titain emes li Yaakov chesed la Avraham. Grant truth to Jacob and kindness to Abraham. Those are the two qualities that define those patriarchs. The chesed, the kindness of Abraham, and the emes of Jacob. The only problem is, we're going to see tonight that it's very hard, unless one really looks at the world through rose-colored glasses, to try to give Jacob a break, because what he does, how he manipulates his father Isaac, and manipulates his brother along the way, doesn't quite seem in keeping with this characteristic that we call emes, truth. Seems to run contrary to that. And that this should be the defining character trait seems to be a problem. So let us now, in source 2, and it continues on, I just broke it down into multiple sources to make it easier on us. This is the episodic story, or the famous, famous story of how Jacob gets the blessings from Isaac. So let us just sort of go through in the English quickly, and I'll point out some possible contradictions to the purity and innocence of Mr. Truth Speaker Jacob, okay? We begin in number 2. But Rebekah overheard when Isaac spoke to Esau, his son, and Esau went to the field to hunt game to bring it, because he wanted food in order to bless him, to give him the brachot. So Rebekah, Rivka, as in any great soap opera, all the good juicy details are always overheard, correct? There's always someone outside the tent hearing something. That's what happened here also, right? Dramatic license. And Rebekah calls Jacob in. And Rebekah said to Jacob, her son, behold, I have heard your father speaking to Esau, your brother, saying, bring me game and make me tasty foods, and I will eat, and I will bless you before the Lord, before my death. And now, my son, Rivka goes on to say to Jacob, hearken to my voice. Listen to me really carefully. To what I am commanding you. Stop for a second. Clearly, she's putting Jacob in a very, very awkward place. She's painting him into a corner. Because the mitzvah of honoring your father and your mother applies equally to both. So she's saying, honor me. More than that, obey me. Okay. Go now, Rebekah says to Jacob, to the flock. Take for me from there 2 choice kids. Now they're mine, rabbis tell us. They belong to Rebekah. I will make them tasty foods for your father as he likes. I'll be your chef. You be the sous chef. And you shall bring them, the prepared food, to your father that he may eat, in order that he bless you before his death. Stop. Now Jacob is, at this point, according to the oral tradition, he is mortified beyond words. This is almost as devastating to Jacob, if not more so, than the command to Abraham to take Isaac and offer him as a sacrifice. This is how fundamental the essence of Jacob was truth. So at this point, he tries to put up a counter-argument without insulting his mother. He has to be very careful not to go against the honor of his mother, Rebekah. So he says to his mother, it's a very, very powerful defense. And Jacob, Yaakov, said to Rebekah, his mother, but behold, my brother Esav, he's Ish Sa'ir. He's a hairy guy. Whereas I am Ish Chalak. I'm a smooth man. I don't have the hair of my brother Esau. Perhaps my father will touch me. And after he finds out that I'm no Esav, I'm Jacob, I will appear to him as a deceiver. Oh my gosh. And I will bring upon myself a curse and not a bracha. And of the most poignant words in the Torah, Rebekah says to Jacob, it's all right. Alai kilalascha b'ni. On me is your curse, my son. Only hearken to my voice, go take them for me. Meaning, I understand the ramifications. And if one of us is going to go to the abyss, to Gehenna, it'll be on me. It won't be on you because you're just following my directive. I'm your mom. I'm telling you, commanding you what to do. Go do it now. I accept full responsibility. Please turn the page.
Will them take them for me?
The food, the goats. Please turn to number three. Like I said, I've just, for expedience sake, broken up the narrative. So we're on source number three now. So Jacob came to his father. He has the food. And remember, what else does he have? I skipped this part. He's been dressed in the goat skins and in Esau's prize, special bigadim hachamudot. He had prize clothing, either beautifully starched and manicured from master garment cleaners in Kingston. He had beautifully clean clothes that he always honored his mother with. It'll be 10% discount when you mention this the next time. We bring our bigadim hachamudot, your special clothing, into them. Okay? Nice people. And another opinion is they were actually the snakeskin suit that had been fashioned by Adam in the aftermath of the story in the Garden of Eden. And King Nimrod had them, and Esau had murdered King Nimrod and had acquired, shall we say, the clothing for himself. And he used to honor his father Isaac by putting on these special clothes. Question is, well, why were they in Rebekah's closet? Why weren't they in his own closet at home? Ah, great question. Glad you asked. Because he had idolatrous wives. Didn't trust them at all. And he knew that if he puts these special clothes that had been worn by Adam and inherited by King Nimrod in their possession, he probably would be bartered off at the next eBay auction, right? In the shuk, in the marketplace. So he kept them only by the one person in the world who he hated the most, his mom, Rebekah, but who he trusted the most.
He hated her, his mother?
Yes. He had no use for his mother, as we will speak about in the weeks to come. That's interesting, interesting. Among the progeny of Esau is Germania min Ha'edom, the German people. It actually says this in the Talmud. Now, what's significant, think about it. Who are the only people in the history of the world to identify themselves as father, not mother? Everyone else says it's my motherland. Who said fatherland?
Yeah.
The Germans. They only identified, as Esau did, only with his father, never with his mother. In fact, it says, as we'll see tonight, that the relationship was such that he, Esau, had absolute antipathy towards everything motherhood. He had no respect for women. He raped women, used women all his life. And his mother was the one person that he couldn't hide from. His father was another story. His father was useful to him, but his mother hadn't. He had no use for his mother. It was only because of the Yerusha, the inheritance. He needed his dad. But it makes sense to pay your way in this world. We'll talk more about this tonight as we go through it, okay? Let's carry on.
Where does the yes. story of the selling of the birthright come into this? It
doesn't really. It only gives the license to Jacob. Thank you for mentioning that, Sue. And we'll come back to it. We'll touch on that. When they were 15 years old is when the famous story happened. And it's in this parsha, but earlier on, where Esau sells his birthright, the rights to be the firstborn, to Jacob for essentially the chalent. Right? The bean.
So Jacob ain't such a nice guy to start with.
But Jacob bought it from him because he despised it, didn't want it. He said, here, it's yours. Just take it off my hands. And here's the thing. Who then had the rights to the blessings? Jacob, by law. Esau, of course, never mentioned the sale to dad. So he's coming now. When dad says, guess what, I have to bless you because I'm getting old and who knows when I die. If Esau had been an upstanding citizen, he should have said, but dad, I'm no longer in possession of those blessings. They belong to dear Jacob. Of course, he didn't say a word. So they were rightfully his at that point. They made a transaction. And by the way, just to let your hearts not be troubled, the Midrash, the oral tradition, says that the food was only to consummate the deal. The way you go, you take your client out for a nice meal, you know, after you do a business deal, he gave him gold. He paid him money for it. The Midrash adds that he paid him gold coins. And to consummate the deal, he gave him the food. Like any good deal, business deal over nice food and wine at the end.
And Rebecca was aware of
yes,
that.
Yes, Rebecca was aware of this.
So when she's plotting this, she's already aware.
Correct.
Rightfully.
But she's even more aware of that. As you'll see, she's more aware than we would think. Okay, very good, very good. Thank you for adding that. Okay, so Mr. Jacob comes into his dad, and he's wearing the goat skins from the goats that had been offered up now as the food. And he had the special bigadin, those special garments. And he comes in. And listen to this. And he says, and he came to his father, this is source number three, and said, my father, Avi. And he, I love when they use pronouns, he, Isaac, said, here I am. Who are you, my son? He's suspicious instantaneously, which is interesting because the voices of the two as twins had the same resonance. So it cannot be just the voice that somehow put the alarm in Isaac's mind. Now, Isaac is blind. So clearly his sense of hearing, it's not that it's improved, as we know. Physiology, it can't improve. It's just accentuated in a blind person because they're much more reliant on the hearing than a seeing person is. So he right away, as you see, says, who are you, my son? He sent him to the field, so he should be aware of who's coming in. No. Jacob said to his father, I am Esau, your firstborn. Whoa. Now that sounds like an overt lie, doesn't it? We'll come back to that. I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you have spoken to me. Please rise, sit down, and eat of my game, so that your soul will bless me. Now Isaac gets really suspicious. And Isaac said to his son, how is it that you have found it so quickly, my son? How did you get back here? The rabbis say, actually, he was worried about the kashrus. Because he had gone so quickly and come back so quickly with the food, he knew that Esau didn't hold of the OU or the star K. But in honor and deference to his father, he would get it shechted correctly. He would use ritual slaughtering. But he's worried, oh my gosh, if he went out, maybe he went to, you know, the McDonald's down the block, and this is not so kosher. So he's worried. So he says, what are you in such a rush? How come you're back so quickly, my son? And what does Jacob respond? Not a smart response. And he, Jacob, said, because the Lord your God prepared it before me. I mean, he helped me to get the food ready expediently. Now, stop for a second. At this point, Isaac's picking up very, very, shall we say, non-Esau-like
Esau
things.
Wouldn't say something like that.
Gotcha. What word? God probably did not come from the lips of Esau in a common way.
Why would it?
Exactly. Can you find another word, please, that might be there? Look in line three. Look what he says to him. He says, please rise. Please rise? We know Esau did not speak this way because later on when he comes in, he says, Yakum Avi, my father shall stand. Like a drill sergeant, you know? Not like it's, please do this. It shall be done. Like a sergeant would say in the army. You will rise before the captain, right? Like, you know, I'm not asking. This is what you do.
Well, there's another option. Get off your tuchus. Stand up.
Okay. But that he wouldn't go quite as far, I don't think. But.
You didn't know Yiddish.
These are words. That's true. This is true. But these are words. The word God and the word please are probably not in the normative vernacular, if you will, of an Esau. Okay. So now Isaac gets downright suspicious. So Isaac said to Jacob exactly what Jacob feared. Please come closer so that I may feel you, my son, whether you really are my son Esau or not. So Jacob drew near to Isaac, his father, and he felt him. And he said, among the most famous verses in the Torah, HaKol Kol Yaakov. The voice that I hear is the voice of Jacob. V'hayadayim, but the hands, Yedei Esau, are the hands of Esau. And he did not recognize Jacob because his hands were hairy like the hands of his brother Esau. And he blessed him. So Jacob gets the blessing. And he said, are you indeed my son Esau? And he, Jacob, responded, I am. Okay, stop. Now, the Medrash, the oral tradition, I love this, likes to try to explain, well, you know, really, Jacob didn't lie. There are two phrases that he said that seem overt lies, okay? All I know is that my little 8-year-old son would try to have the manipulation factor going on here. It would be totally unacceptable. So listen to how, go back, please, to line two. I love this one. It's my favorite one. So Jacob said to his father, in response to who you are, he said, I am Esau, your firstborn. Finished. That's an overt lie. Oh, no, no, the rabbi said. He didn't really say it that way. He said, I am, and then he paused, and in his mind he said, I am Jacob. Stop. Esau is your firstborn. Statement. So he didn't lie, right? In his mind. So can you imagine your little son or daughter? No, no, Dad, Mom, I didn't lie to you. I was thinking about something else, right? I had my fingers crossed on my back. It was, right? What did they call that? There's a word when they do that. Yeah, my fingers were crossed, yeah. And I was not really saying what I thought I said. And also at the end, he said, "Are you really my son Esau?" And he said, "I am." And then he said again in his mind, "Jacob." So he never lied. Really? Now that's twisting the truth to the point where I don't know what else you call it. But be that as it may, I just wanted to share that with you. Okay? Now, so Jacob has the blessing. He leaves. And they had a little revolving door there. And it's very nerve-wracking when you're doing this inside. Because literally, Jacob walks out one door, Esau comes in. And Esau is really angry because God did not allow him to hurry and rush and to be as adept to catching the food. And it was a pain because normally he just shoots the animal dead, brings it in, it's food. But because his dad is Isaac and he needs to be kosher, he has to capture the animal. So every time he catches the animal and he's about to shecht it, somehow the animal gets loose. And he's very frustrated. So it says at the end, and thank God Isaac didn't eat this, that he got so frustrated he couldn't catch any kosher food. So he killed an old dog, cooked it up. And that's what he was going to try to feed his dad. Thank God Isaac didn't eat the dog food.
Was understood at that point, even though
it was before Matan Torah. It was before the giving of our Torah at Sinai, where the law of kashrut, of dietary laws, becomes binding. But we believe that our forefathers kept most of the Torah that was applicable. So absolutely, he would have known how to shecht. Abraham was the first person, actually probably going back to Adam. They probably ritually slaughtered their food. Now, obviously, it's not with the detail that we have today. You know, they didn't, you know, maybe have all the minutiae. They didn't have the OU back then. Maybe they did. You never know. Maybe the Orthodox Union did exist back then, you know. But there's no question that there were certain elements of kashrut that Isaac demanded, and Esau was a smart guy. Now remember, Esau has a Jewish mother and a Jewish father. He is a halakhically, by Jewish law, he's a Jewish man, right? So you can trust him. I mean, I guess. All right. So Esau comes in source number 4. And it came to pass when Isaac had finished blessing Jacob, and it came to pass Jacob had just left his father's Isaac's presence, that his brother Esau came from his hunt. And he too had made tasty foods, if you like dog food. And he brought them to his father. And he said to his father, I love this. Doesn't say, please get up. This is Esau, right? Let my father rise. Right? Just like a you know, Nazi Yimach Shmo would speak to the pervert. My father will rise, like a drill sergeant, right? Let my father rise and eat of the game of his son so that your soul will bless me. There's no warmth, there's no love, honor, yes. But there's nothing from...
Can't be much honor if he's going to feed him a dog.
Well, I don't think he worried about that too much. He was just frustrated at life. And his father Isaac said to him, now you can only imagine poor Isaac. He just gave the blessings away to Esau. What? Or did he? Well, he thought he gave them to Esau. And in comes, there's no mistaking who this is. I mean, the man is talking like Esau. There's no question now Isaac's mind must be just, he was almost beyond words at this point. As you'll see, it almost killed him because he realized what had happened. And his father, Isaac, said to him, who are you? You can only imagine him saying this. Miata, who are you? And he said, I am your son, your firstborn, Esau. Oh my gosh. And Isaac, it says, shuddered a great shudder. He just goosebumps. He almost fainted from shock. And he said, who then is the one who hunted game and brought it to me? And I ate of everything while you had not yet come. And I blessed him. He too shall be blessed. Now, Isaac at that moment thought his life was over. He had given the blessings to Jacob. The blessings were meant for Esau. And
gives a blessing. Does that mean he's going to die soon?
No, it's not so much that he's going to die, because he does live a long time. He's worried that he, by doing this egregious sin to Esau, it will destroy Esau. And he hopes he had that Esau would be the next generation. And he did a sin by doing the unthinkable, because he knows that how Esau's going to react to this. I mean, he's not under illusions of Esau's character. So he's destroyed his whole family. And he issues forth this charada, this shaking, and he just thinks his world's over. Now, the Medrash goes further. The oral tradition says that he actually saw Esau standing, but he's blind. He can't see him. Yes, God allowed him to see. And he saw Esau there with murder in his eyes, because Esau understands what has happened. And he sees there's a fiery pit of hell, of the abyss, has opened up behind Esau. And at that moment, Isaac thinks, I'm going there because of what I did, because I gave the bracha of the blessings to the wrong son. So this is my end now, because I tragically messed up. Now, he doesn't understand, or at least not yet, that maybe that is God's way of saying, this is, the fires are not for you, Isaac. They're for the man you deem to be your firstborn son, Esau. You think he's such a tzaddik, such a righteous person. So the rabbis say that at that moment, when he shuddered and he saw this vision of the pit of the abyss in front of him, that was the moment in the life of Isaac, the first time he was ever aware of the true nature of who Esau was. It was only at that moment that the rose-colored glasses came off and he saw Esau for who Esau was. Because he realized, oh my gosh, the pit's for Esau, it's not for me. And that's why that's why he responds with the words that drove Esau ballistic. Listen to the last words of number four. He too shall be blessed. And think about it. If I have the power to bless you, I also have the power to curse you, don't I? So at the moment of deception, and the deception is revealed, why couldn't Isaac simply say, I curse Jacob for stealing the blessings from me and deceiving me, right? No. Au contraire, in response to the vision that God supplies him of who the true nature of Esau, he says, Gam Baruch Yihyeh, may he be blessed too. Meaning, I know now that it's Jacob, not Esau. And Esau goes ballistic at this moment. You'll see. Yes, Jason.
Is this a weekly occurrence where they offer food to Isaac and he offers a blessing?
It's not clear how often Esau would come with a special food, but clearly, I would say more than a weekly occurrence. He would dress up in those special clothes, and he would honor his father and serve his father, and he would make up, you know, stories of how he learned Torah. Esau was a very sharp man. We'll talk a little bit about it in a few minutes, okay? I would say it was a norm. That's why he says, get the food. You know the food I like. You know the spices and the recipe. Go get it so that I have a full stomach, and then I will feel satisfied and happy. And then I'll be able to bless you with a full heart. So clearly that was a common occurrence. Absolutely. The rabbis say, it's another discussion for another night, but that no one in the history of the world ever honored his father the way Esau honored Isaac. So that's an open question. How could this be? Esau, the murderer? Yeah. He honored his father like no one else in human history. There was a great rabbi in the Talmud, named Rambam Gamliel, who says that all my life I honored my father. I did about 1% of what Esau did for his own father. That's how magnificent his honor was. Now, honor does not mean love. Honor is something else that we have to discuss in a future date. Okay? Number five. When Esau heard his father's words, meaning, not only did I bless Jacob, but I'm not retracting. I'm staying with that blessing. He cried out a great bitter cry. Tzaka ad marah, it says. Then he said to his father, bless me too, oh my father. Now he almost sounds like a little boy. You finally realize, oh my gosh, I've lost everything, right? Listen to what he says. And he said, no, I can't, Isaac said. Your brother came with Kanin b'mirma and took your blessing. And he said, Esau says out loud, ha, is it for this reason that he was named Jacob? Hachi karashmo Yaakov. That's why they call him Jacob, for he has deceived me twice. And you know what word they use fascinatingly for deception? Jacob's own name. Because the word for Jacob is a heel. Underhanded, the heel's the bottom of your foot. So he actually uses that word. He says, Ya'akveniza. He healed me twice. Pamayim. So he uses Jacob's name to show the cunning side of Jacob, which is a stunning idea. We'll come back to that. He took my birthright, Esau announces. Oh my gosh, probably shouldn't have said this, Esau. And behold, now he has taken my blessing. Because the rabbis say, wait a minute. Isaac stops him and says, you took what? Your birthright? I didn't know anything about this. And then when Esau says, I sold it to him, you know, when we were 15 years old. He gave me gold and, oh, see, now all the information starts to come out. Right? Loose lips sing shit. So Esau says, first he tricked me by taking my birthright when we were kids, and now he's taking my blessing. And he said, Esau says to his father, have you not reserved a blessing for me? And Isaac answered and said to Esau, behold, I made him a master over you, and I gave him all of his brothers as servants, and I have sustained him with corn and wine. So for you then, what shall I do, my son? Meaning, if I made him your master, and you're his servant, any blessing that I give to the servant goes to the master automatically. In other words, if I give $1 million by Torah law to an Evet Kenani, to someone owned by his master, who has rights on that $1 million? The master. So whatever blessing I give you now, Esau, since you are now formally subservient in the eyes of God to your brother Jacob, it belongs to him anyways. What can I do? I'm sorry, my hands are tied. And now Esau, listen to him, he breaks down. And he says, and Esau said to his father, but have you but one blessing, my father? Please bless me too. And Esau raised his voice and wept. Stop for one second. He wept, cried. The rabbis say this cry almost killed the Jewish people. Because it was this cry that was paid back generations later when a descendant of Esau named Haman makes a descendant of Jacob named Mordechai cry and weep in response to the edict when they send out the letter to kill all the Jews in the time of the Purim story. That all that is played out over generations because of this one moment where Esau realized the enormity of what he had lost, a spiritual blessing to God, and he cried with a real heart, oh my gosh, I lost it. Boom. At that moment, Haman is invented. He's created the potentiality for who Haman will be. Amazing. We'll come back to that in a Purim time, okay? You have to come back later on for more stories. Okay, let's carry on. We're almost finished with this part, okay? So he cried. And his father Isaac answered him and said, okay, fine. Behold, your dwelling place shall be the fat places of the earth and the dew of the heaven from above. You shall live by your sword and you shall serve your brother. And it will be when you grieve that you will break off his yoke from your neck. Okay, stop. So at this point, let's get back to our original question. The whole truth, nothing but the truth, so help you God. This is Jacob, Mr. Truth. He seems to be more Mr. Jacob the deceiver, as Esau put it. He seems to have lied to his father. Yeah, you can make up reasons. It was obviously Rebekah put him in a untenable situation, sure. But it shouldn't be that Mr. Jacob, who's Mr. Truth, and even though it's against his nature. And the rabbis say that when he was given this mitzvah, this command by mom, by Rebekah, he cried the entire time. The same way that Esau cried when he realized his loss in retrospect, Jacob cried as he's preparing the food and doing all the things that Rebekah demanded of him in preparation for his coming into Isaac to deceive Isaac. So it was clearly against the essence of who Jacob was. But even if you want to say that, well, you know, he made a little verbal commitment, you know, well, yeah, I am Jacob, right? Like Mr. Subliminal. I am Jacob. Esau's your firstborn. I mean, you really want to say that this is the paradigm of Mr. MS, of Mr. Truth? So I think in order to answer this, we need to go back, and that's what we're going to do in a few moments. Yes,
David? Here's the question. Since Esau sold his birthright to Jacob.
Correct.
Even if that deceit, that the clothing and
yes,
if Isaac had given the blessing to Esau because he was the firstborn, didn't it actually belong to Jacob?
It was rightfully.
What would have happened in the case if you had given it to Esau because Jacob had a prior claim on it?
Excellent question.
He might have been involved with this deceit to make actual what had been set in motion before.
Very well said.
Even though he was uncomfortable doing this, but he had already earned the right to be there.
Clearly, absolutely. So you're saying essentially you cannot defend, because I don't know how to defend the actions so much of Jacob, but you're saying he was in the right without question. 100%. I agree. 100%. They were his blessings. It was rightfully his. It was not Esau. And Esau was the one who, by omitting the sale from all those years ago when they were 15 years old, now they're in their 60s, he omitted it. So clearly, he's playing the game.
He acted as if it hadn't taken
place. Exactly. Because in his mind, it hadn't. It would have been coerced or whatever. I'm sure he had his own rationalization of it. Okay. What I'd like to do now is go back now that we've explored the story. We all feel comfortable, I think, with the story, and there's no question that at the very minimum, Jacob was played loosely with the truth. We would say that. Question is, how do we defend Jacob? Our question originally was he a liar and a deceiver? I mean, Esau says he was. Esau says, ha, that's why they call him Mr. Deceiver, Jacob, the Mr. Heel. Now, it's significant to know that when he gets his new name Israel, the name Israel has what word in it? Yashar. You know, Yashar means upright. Straight and narrow, upright. And who gave him that name? The angel of Esau. Had to admit to him, guess what? You're not a swindler. In response to the declaration of Esau that you're a swindler, you're underhanded, you're Yisrael, Yashar. You're above board. But that's for a later time in Parshas Vayishlach, okay? Number 7. Let's go back to the beginning. And let's try to understand the dynamic. Because here's a question for you. What would the simplest thing have been from Rebecca's standpoint? Why couldn't Rebecca simply go to Isaac and say to Isaac, dear, I want you to bless Jacob and not Esau. Now, before you ask why, let's examine the evidence, okay? So look at number 7. Vayitzrot tzitzu habani bekirba, and the children struggled within Rebekah, and she said, if it be so, meaning even before there were babies formed in her, they were all kicking and doing crazy karate moves, why am I like this? And she went to inquire of the Lord. So she went to the yeshiva of Shem and Aver. Shem and Aver were the son and grandchildren of Noah, and they had a yeshiva. So she went to ask of God, what's going on? And Shem was a Navi, he was a prophet. So they struggled. So Rashi says, perforce, this verse calls for a midrashic interpretation. It means oral interpretation. For it does not explain what this struggling was all about within Rebekah's womb. And the Torah wrote, if it be so, why am I like this? Rebekah asked out loud. Our rabbis interpreted that the word vayitrotzitzu is an expression of the word rotsa, rats, go quickly, run. When Rebekah passed by the entrances of the Torah academies of Shem and Aver, Jacob would metaphorically or literally run inside her tummy and struggle to be born, to come out. When she passed the entrance of the temple of idolatry, Esau would run and struggle to come out. So they would kick. Now, what was the problem here? She didn't know they were twins. She thought she had a kid who was totally bipolar in the most major way possible. Because on one hand, he's waiting to go to Ohav Tzedek Adavin with the Minyan, and we could use him. And on the other hand, when he's going past the temple of Baal Peor, or some idol, he would be kicking also. She didn't know there are two distinct personalities within her womb. So that's the answer. No. You have two children. One will be for one will be for the other. One will serve God, one will serve idols. Okay?
What were they teaching in yeshivas at that time before the Torah came?
That's an excellent question. Off the scope of tonight's class, but they were clearly teaching a Torah of the flood of the world as it was, not necessarily the Torah of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Excellent question. We will go there at some point. But just it's a really long, convoluted discussion.
Okay.
Thank you. It's an excellent question.
We all ask excellent questions.
Number 9 at the top of page 3 in your source sheet. So God said to Rebekah through Shem, two nations are in your womb, and two kingdoms will separate from your innards. One kingdom will become mightier than the other kingdom, and the elder will serve the younger. The Rav Yavod Tzair, the elder one will serve the Tzair, the younger one.
And this is before they were born.
Yes. Now, what does that mean? It means that whoever is the firstborn will be subservient to the secondborn. This was a prophecy given to Rebekah, not to Isaac. Isaac wasn't privy to this prophecy. Only Rebekah, the mom. So remember, she has known from even before birth that in the end it had to be Jacob, not Mr. Esau.
Okay. When did she find out she had twins?
At this point.
Okay.
She said, you have two in your stomach. One will be for idols, one will be for God, and the older will be subservient to the younger in the end.
This is a blessing that Hashem gives to women to have this intuition ahead of time before we...
No, this is not intuition. This is, Jason, this is actually a direct prophecy from God. And where she asked Shem, Noah's son, and Shem, who was a prophet, told her what was going on. So it's, and women definitely have feminine intuition, and they understand. But this is way beyond just feminine intuition that we call Bina, you know, this extra insight that the ladies possess.
Kabbalistic.
Right, but this is way beyond. This is like a direct insight into what the mind of God is at that time. Okay? Number 10. And the youths grew up, and Esau was a man who understood hunting, a man of the field, whereas Jacob was an innocent man dwelling in tents. Now Rashi's bothered. Why does it have to say, okay, Esau's a hunter, and Jacob's a tent dweller, means someone who learns Torah in a tent. Why does it say, though, that he understood hunting? It should just say he is a hunter. Why does it say he understood how to hunt? Isn't that weird? Bothers Rashi a whole lot. Why does it have the word yodea, Sayyid? I know about hunting. So he says it doesn't mean conventional hunting. Yeah, he knew how to hunt also. But if it just wanted to tell us that he could conventionally hit the mark from the bow and arrow, it wouldn't have to use the word that he understood it. Unless it was telling us something on a deeper level. Well, listen to what Rashi said, very famous Rashi, number 11. And the youths grew up, and Esau was, as long as they were small, they were not recognizable through their deeds. No one scrutinized them to determine their character, who was good, who was bad. But as soon as they became 13 years old, this one, Jacob parted to the houses of study, and that one parted to the houses of idol worship. Who understood hunting? Esau knew how to trap and deceive his father and his mouth. With his mouth, he used his mouth to not only feed him food that he caught in a literal sense, but he used his mouth to manipulate him with words because he was a genius. He would ask him, Father, he'd come home dressed up in his beautiful garments with his food. He'd say, Yitzhak Avinu, Dad, how do we tie salt and straw? And his father, Isaac, thereby thought that he was scrupulous in his observance of the commandments. Never mind that he was a murderer and a rapist and all those, you know, nice things that he did. These were the good characteristics of Esau. So he was a hunter, both in the literal sense, simplistically, he would hunt with a bow and arrow, but in the more profound sense, he manipulated and deceived his father every single moment of their lives. Okay? So who is the deceiver, I ask? It's clearly Esau. Okay? Let's go on. And Isaac loved Esau, number 13, because his game means his food. The food that he caught was in his mouth. But Rebekah loved Jacob. In his mouth, the Midrash interpretation is, with Esau's mouth, for he would entrap Isaac and deceive him with his words. Okay, let's stop. Who orchestrated, who is the director, the producer, and the playwright of what we will call the deception?
Mommy.
Mommy. Jacob is simply the hired help. He's the actor who is not only enlisted, he's not given a choice. So we asked a question. Why couldn't Rivka, Imena, just simply go to Isaac and say, look, Yitzchak, you were not given a prophecy from God. I was. I happen to know that in the end, because God says so, it will be Jacob, not Esau. You would be making a horrible mistake to give the blessings to the wrong son. So the rabbis deal with this. One opinion is that Isaac's response would have been, you know, everything is in God's hands. Whatever God wants, he'll do. That wasn't good enough for Rebekah. When she saw fate coming there, that Esau had been asked by Isaac specifically to get him food, she could not let this go on. But here's my point. What had gone on? There had been a theatrical performance of absolute Tony Award-winning type of nomination and award going on for over 60 years now. Only the problem is, who was the deceiver? It was Esau. It was never Jacob. So, according to what we've seen now, who was the hunter? Always Esau. He continually manipulated his father, Isaac, every step of the way. He deceived him. Now, Isaac was literally and figuratively blind. He didn't know. He couldn't see. He was in his tent. He only knew what was around him. He heard his son. He heard his son honor him. He tasted delicious food. His son asked brilliant questions from the Talmud. You know, he'd say, Dad, how do we do this? How do we do that? So Isaac thought, oh, okay, well, you know, I heard rumor that maybe Esau's not an angel, but look, he's interested in learning after all. He asked great questions. He's a brilliant learner. He's a good student. And the rabbis say that he wasn't delusional, Isaac. He thought maybe the two brothers will kind of work together. Isaac thought the following scenario could be. They'll be partners. Esau will be the money man with a little learning on the side. He'll be the one who can accomplish things in this world because he can deal with the real world. Jacob's a little yeshiva kid, right? He sits in his tent all day. What does he know from deception? And they work in partners, meaning Jacob can't possibly carry this out in the real world. He's a little kid. What does he know? He's innocent. He can't pull off anything. But Esau, oh my gosh, he could accomplish the world. He'll support Jacob while Jacob learns and studies Torah and is goody-two-shoes and takes the Torah part of the Judaism. And Esau will be the man of accomplishment. And together, they'll be partners in this world. That was always, I'm sure, the vision of Isaac. Rebekah knew that wasn't true. Because Rebekah knew that Esau would devour Jacob if the two were partners. That partnership would be a very, very temporary partnership, would not carry out over generations. So Rebekah knew that it wasn't good enough just to say, as Isaac invariably would have said, it's all in the hands of God. So she orchestrates a scenario. Now, I ask you. Isaac is Mr. Justice. At the outset, we described how each of the fathers has one defining aspect. That is their character, right? Abraham's kindness. We said Jacob was truth. And power, din, justice is Isaac. So I ask you, if justice is blind, now Mr. Justice is Isaac, and he is blind, correct? So justice is blind. Justice can't see the real perpetrator, who is the real criminal, in front of them. Esau's there every single day. But he manipulates the law. He manipulates his father, who is Mr. Law. The law can't deal with it. So let me ask you, what do the police do? What do crime forces do when somebody is beyond the law? What do? They've invented a way to handle this. What do? Please, come on. You've all watched Serpico and movies over the years. What do? They have what's called undercover policemen, correct? What? Yeah. They become drug dealers. They give up their families. They grow, you know, beards, and they have the earrings and tattoos, and they actually sometimes even have to kill people in the process of showing the family or whoever they're dealing with that they're really part of it, right? It's really true. So in our world, when people are untouchable, when there is crime going on and they're beyond the law, they go undercover. That's exactly what Jacob did. He was literally the first undercover policeman. Rebecca saw the reality. There is no way that Isaac will ever see the truth about Esau. Esau's brilliant. He is the best of the best. No one could deceive the way Esau deceived. So she comes up with a little theatrical play that she knows will be discovered. She doesn't know if it will be discovered as Jacob is trying to get the blessings. It could be that he'll reach out and touch Jacob and say, oh, you're not Esau, you're Jacob, right? What does she say? It's not a problem, my son. It'll be on me. Any curses, it'll be on me. But what if it's only after the fact, which has to happen? She knows that Esau's going to come at some point, and Isaac's going to say, oh my gosh, you mean I gave the blessings to Jacob? You mean he lied to me? So at some point in the very near future, would you all agree that it's inevitable that the little play orchestrated by Mother Rebecca is going to be discovered by Isaac? But that's exactly what Rebecca clearly wants, because she's calling the shots. She dresses her son up undercover. Think of the clothing that he wears. He literally is wearing what? The goat skins, which are symbolic of who? Esav, Seir, goats. He's wearing his clothes that were in her closet. He's literally dressed up as an undercover policeman, if you will. And he's going not to perpetrate a crime. I would say the opposite. When a policeman goes undercover, it's because justice is skewered in the favor of the criminal. It's like two negatives equal a positive. The only way Rebecca hoped to open up, both literally and metaphorically, the eyes of Isaac, and did it work. It really worked, was to show Isaac who Esav really was. The only way she can show Isaac who Esav is by making Jacob act like Esav in that one moment. As soon as he discovers it, he goes, oh my gosh, I thought Esav was a tzaddik, was a righteous person. Now I see who Esav really is. And then he's also thinking, wait a minute, the goody two-shoes Jacob? He pulled this off? I thought that Jacob was a little yeshiva guy who's learning Torah all day. What does he know about this? Oh my gosh. Gam Baruch Yeh! I'm giving the blessings to Jacob in full knowledge of who he is, because if he can pull off this little scam here and fool me into thinking that he's Esav, oh my gosh, he's a lot more capable than I ever give him credit for. Here, pre-2-4, I thought, oh my gosh, they'd have to be in partners? Jacob doesn't need Esav anymore. Let him be his own man. Gam Baruch Yeh! And so when Esav realizes the enormity of what was just said, that his dad is now on to him, and he understands and sees him for who he is, he goes ballistic because he realizes it's all gone. There's no way he's ever going to play the game again. It can't be. So I would say to you, in response to my question, was Jacob a liar and a deceiver? Absolutely not. The ultimate liar and deceiver was Mr. Esau all along. 63 years of lies and deception. And the only way Rebecca / Jacob could bring truth to the equation was to become Esau temporarily, to show how skewered this equation was and to balance the books of Mr. Justice. And so I would say to you that, yeah, absolutely. Technically, an undercover policeman sometimes has to break the law. I mean, they do all the time. They're given legal license to do things that are, you know, if they have to you know, be with the bad guys, and sometimes the bad guys are doing, you know, certain bad things. Obviously, a policeman won't want to participate in a murder or anything because he's a policeman. But you know stories where they're given license to do certain gray area things. Well, these were the gray area things that Jacob was allowed to go over, to transgress, all for the sake of what? All for the sake of proving and showing Dad Isaac who Esau really was. Now, of course, Jacob was not a willing participant. You have to keep in mind that even though, yes, it all happened, it was all done and all orchestrated by Mother Rebecca, by Rivka, who is really the most amazing, I think, of the Jewish mothers. I mean, she's like, you think about the enormity of what she had to do to show Isaac and to bring truth to the equation, and she was successful in a major way.
Could you go over again, please, what Esau did that made Isaac realize the character of his son?
Nothing. Nothing at all. It was only when he realized the scam perpetrated by his younger son, Jacob, by pretending to be Esau. And then as Esau comes in, Esau starts to sort of let little things slip, that he had sold, in fact, the rights to the birthright to Jacob along the way. And this wasn't the first time that he... And it's such irony that of all the people in the world to make fun of Jacob and call him a liar and a deceiver... should be the ultimate liar and deceiver who makes that ludicrous comment. Ha! That's why they call him Mr. Deceiver. Really, what are you? Right? That's like, I mean, you know, it's like Bernie Madoff getting mad at the local banker for taking $100 in his pocket. What a gonav! Right? Mr. Madoff says, what a thief, that guy. He took $100 from the bank. Really, Mr. Madoff? Really? He's the Bernie Madoff. Esau's the Bernie Madoff of chicanery, right? And he has the audacity. So I would say to you like this. Isaac was never given the prophecy. Remember at the outset, Rebecca was told by God it will be Jacob and not Esau. She knows. She's given insider knowledge. Isaac doesn't have that knowledge. But it was only when Esau comes back in at the end after Jacob's left and he's going nuts saying, I want my blessing. Where's my blessing? And Isaac is stunned. Who is this in front of me? He's not behaving the way I thought he was. And he starts yelling at his father. And at that moment, God gives him this vision. And in that vision, the Midrash, the Oral Midrash says, he saw the fires of the pits of hell open up behind Esau. Remember? And originally he thought it was for himself. And then he realized, no, God's telling you it's for Esau. And you gave the right blessings to the right son. And at that moment, Isaac makes that statement, let him be blessed. And that's our last comment for tonight, number 15. He too shall be blessed. What does this mean? Read it with me, please. That you should not say that had Jacob not deceived his father, he would not have received the blessings. Therefore, he concurred and blessed him intentionally. Meaning he did it with full knowledge of who Esau was, who Jacob was in the light of day, no chicanery, no dressing up. And that, of course, drove Esau way off. He couldn't accept that. Because he knew the game was over. He had had a longest running play. I mean, it was longer than the Fantastics have been on Broadway. I think they've been on about 50 years, right? The Fantastics on Broadway or off Broadway, right? So at some point, you know, maybe in 100 years from now, the Fantastics will end. Maybe when the Phantom of the Opera ends, we don't know. But whatever that is, this is the longest running play in Canaanite history. And it came to an end this day. Because this was the day that Isaac's eyes opened. The undercover operation all orchestrated by Miss Rivka, by Rebecca Imenu, all came to fruition.
How long did Isaac live after that?
Interestingly, that you should ask that. He says, he makes a statement, here I'm about to die, and I should bless you, Esau, before I die. He lived to 180. He's the only one of the patriarchs who lived to that ripe old age. I believe at this point, if he's 60, he's 123. So he still has another 52 years of life. But remember that the Isaac post, shall we say, binding of Isaac, when he almost lost his life, was never the same human being as he was in the first years of his life. That close call with the knife with his father and Abraham, he never was the same person going forward. But he did live another 50 years after that.
Yeah, I can understand.
Yes. Okay, Shabbat Shalom to everyone.